How do you spell a book? I'll teach you right now. B as in, book. And O as in OBGYN. And K as in OK. But I won't read that book about an OBGYN anytime soon.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Not Your Normal Books. My name is Kalen. How are you guys doing today? I'm doing good, but getting preoccupied by the four bowls of candy that are in front of me. And I know what you're thinking. You should move them. I probably should. But I don't know where I can move them to. So when this episode comes out, it comes out on Easter. Hence the candy in front of me. And for those of you who do celebrate Easter, happy Easter. Sunday is also my mom's birthday, so another year older for her. I got her gift that came in today. I went halvesies on it with her boyfriend and just got her these miniature cheesecakes. I was a little surprised I got to spend as much time with my mom's boyfriend and his son for as long as I did. I was planning on hanging out with them for like an hour. I was supposed to have a tattoo appointment yesterday, but my tattoo artist ended up getting sick, and right when I got into town, I was an hour early getting into town than what my appointment was, just so then I could like hang out, have some lunch to make sure like my blood sugar wasn't like low or anything while I was getting tattooed. And but her and her son caught a stomach bug, so I have my appointment rescheduled, so I have to wait at least another two weeks or so before my next appointment. I have been watching a ton of Supernatural to the point where like I don't even feel like reading while I'm at home, which is very, very unusual for me. Like I just don't, it's not like I'm in a book slump. It's just like I don't want to read, which is so weird because usually I'm constantly, I need to read this, need to read that, and all that. And like, I've got multiple books ready to go on my Kindle that I'm just like, I want to read this, but then I'm just like, I'm not in that reading mood. I don't know. I used to be able to read like a book a day. Now it's taken me like 4 or 5 days to finish a book, which is so unlike me. I have to get back into that, reading gist of things. If you guys follow me if you guys even just go to my Instagram, I had said last episode that I was gonna go see Elton John. It was amazing. I went with my brother. We had a fantastic time. On my Instagram, I put down I put up a couple pictures and a video. My brother had sent me a snap earlier in the day with him at his desk at his job going, Elton John is going to sing to me tonight. It was such a good concert. Elton, he came on about like 8:10, 8:15, sang for 2.5 hours, it was just him. He had no opener. And he didn't really take any breaks at all. It was amazing. I thought about possibly getting tickets for his show that he's doing in Cleveland in the next couple months, but I'm not entirely sure. Like, it'd be fun. It'd be really fun to do, but I don't know. The question is, do I really want to spend that money? And then do I want to take some more days off of work? And then I kind of have to, I've only got a couple more vacation days left for the year, so I just gotta kind of use those sparingly. I feel like there's something else, and you know, it's one of those to where you know you want to talk about something, then you can't remember what you're going to talk about, something then you think you remember, but then what you remember you need to talk about is not for the podcast, but it's for your therapist. So it's like, I really need to start to write these things out of what I want to talk about in the opening. But I don't, and I really should probably start that so it's not all like clustered around everywhere. I can't think of anything, so we are just going to get right into our book. The book that we have this week is Haven by Laurie Falter. I know that I said last week it was Faulkner. I was wrong. It's Falter. So about Laurie, she is a best-selling young adult author. She is also an animal rights activist, a sailor, a one-handed golf putter, and a conqueror of the Colorado River. Our characters in this are Kennedy, Harrison, May, Doc, and Beverly. Now, May's name is actually spelled M-E-I. So the book takes place in a suburb outside of Chicago. Now, Kennedy, who we're hearing all these words through a kind of like a journal that she had kept. So a year before, her father had died, and she has been living with the principal of the school ever since. Now, something a little different, there's a couple things that are a little different about Kennedy. Her dad was a military man his entire life. He didn't exactly know how to raise a daughter. So when she got to a certain age, like, he started taking her to all these like different training exercises. So she would train with, like, because her dad was Marine. So she would go in and train with all these other Marines. She basically has dreams of the future. Everything that she dreams of, or dreams that she can remember, they always happen. So she has one morning. And it's her, she has a rifle, she's running, she knows something's chasing her, she knows it's an infected, she is jumping over this, she gets to this abandoned building, and she starts running through it, and then she notices a hole in the floor. So she jumps it, but when she lands, she breaks her ankle. And even though, yes, that infected died, a whole bunch of others heard that, and she can hear them coming towards her. And that's when she wakes up. So the morning that she wakes up from this dream, it is also the 1 year anniversary of her father's death. Now, she's doing a little something that is different than what we would normally do. Normally on like an anniversary of a death of a loved one, we would take flowers, maybe balloons, just depending on the age, stuffed animals, anything like that. But she is going to the gun and ammo store, and she is getting throwing stars that she ordered. And those throwing stars are going to go on her father's grave at the end of the day. Now, the owner of the store, Mr. Chow, had told her to keep the stars on her and to seek shelter. And so for the first time, they talk to each other. But while they're talking to each other, all of a sudden they hear this chaos just going on around them. They see a security guard start running towards the doors, talking on his walkie-talkie, telling them to lock the gates. And so they both start taking off after the security guard to figure out what's going on. And once they get out the doors, what they see just stuns them. They are shocked. They're shocked, they're shook, they're stunned. They're frozen in place as they're watching everything unfold. And what they're seeing is people with bite wounds on them are going after and biting and eating other people. And it is chaos. People are trying to flee in cars. They're hitting, they're mowing down students by accident. All these people are just trying to flee and they're not paying attention. And yes, it's chaos. They see the security guard and he's dead. They're able to get his gun off of him. And after fighting with some of the things, people that are going stark mad, they're able to shut the gates. Once they get back inside the school, they see only three other students. And they do a whole walk around the school. But the other students in there are Beverly, May, and Doc. Now, these are teenagers. They're not watching the news. I'm a grown adult and I barely watch the news. But if they paid attention to the news, they would have heard that there was a virus that was hitting all major cities across the world and turning victims aggressive and homicidal. And when they see, when Harrison and Kennedy see only three other students besides them, reality hits them of what's going on. Now, they are, as I said before, they are in a suburb outside of Chicago, but only five made it to safety. Now, the entire school is has a fence around it. I find, for me, like in the book, that's great. For me personally, I find that weird. I did not grow, the school that I went to, the high school that I went to, any of the schools that I went to, we didn't have, our school wasn't fenced in. We didn't have metal detectors you had to walk through. We had nothing of that. And I went to college with some people that had that, and I thought it was like the weirdest thing. But I also grew up with my high school surrounded by cornfields. So one of the students, Beverly, her and Kennedy used to be best friends. But that all ended once Kennedy's dad died, because Kennedy, she changed. She didn't care about keeping up with fashions anymore. Her whole world was rocked, especially when she found out the circumstances in which her father had died. We'll get into that here in a little bit. But Beverly, she was the one that it seemed like set the trends. Everyone wanted to be friends with her. And she is just constantly on her phone trying to call her parents and or trying to call her dad, and she's just like, I only have to hang out here until my dad comes to get me. Like, she's being oblivious to what is actually going on. Now, they do go to see if they can find Doc and Mee's family, and it's, and, you know, it's hard. They have access to Kennedy's car, which is her father's old car that's called Old Boy. But when they go to their houses, they find nothing but hordes of the infected. So before I go on, so I noticed this in the book. And I've also noticed this with every and all zombie movie that I had seen. Because this is what it is. They're zombies. I tried to watch The Walking Dead. I watched maybe two episodes of it and I just couldn't get into it. And I love zombie movies. I do. But I have noticed in this book, along with a lot of the other movies, except for Dawn of the Dead, every time that you see a zombie, they're either young adults or full-grown adults and elderly. You don't really see any child zombies, which I am very grateful for. I don't know if I'd be able to stand watching a movie that had like 5-year-old zombies. How sad. They would be so fucking sad. But I've noticed that whenever any of them become, or anyone in the book come across any of the infected, it's always teenagers around their age, or adults, or someone that's elderly. Over the next few weeks, they go through all of the lockers, and they pick out kind of what they need, or they try to find weapons and just like bits of things that they could use. They have a fully stocked kitchen that they can use. They have a solar oven. It's not too long after they first get into the school that they lose all power, so that solar oven is able to help a lot with the cooking. There's a day where Harrison and Kennedy are outside. They're walking the perimeter, and something stops Kennedy. It never broke through the fence. But she knows that car. It's Beverly's father's car. He'd been bitten and turned into the infected, so they did the only thing that they could and killed him. And they decide that they're not going to tell anyone else in the group about what had happened. So the dream that Kennedy had in the beginning of the book, that comes true. Except for when she lands, she doesn't break her ankle. She remembers it, so she changes her body. But what she went to go get was a AR-15. Oh, wait, no, I skipped something. Kennedy has another dream, and this is Beverly finding out about her father's body, and then she goes berserk. She has this metal pipe, and she just starts slamming it through the holes of the fence, and she's riling up the infected. She's also killing them as she's going, and they notice that one of the gates are unlocked, and they're able to break in, and that's when she wakes up, and she knows that, you know, in case this does happen, they need to have some form of protection. So she leaves the confines of the school and she goes to Mr. Chow's shop, that is the gun and ammunition store. And, you know, she gets there and she sees that it's been ransacked. But she knows that he always keeps something in a safe. So there she's able to get, in the safe, she's able to get a AR-15 and has 830, and she's able to find also 830 round magazines. So she's at the part of her, she's in real life, she's at the part of her dream where she's in that building, she's being chased by infected, she makes a jump, she remembers how she landed, and she broke her ankle, so she adjusts how she's going to land, and she comes up with just a scratch, maybe. But she has all these infected swarming her, and Harrison comes up, and he is just, like, tearing everything to, like, bits and pieces. And this, and throughout the book, you get to see that Harrison's a little different. But when they're finally able to get back to school, they see that Kennedy is unharmed. But Harrison is bit to hell and back. Now, this isn't the first time he's been bitten by someone that was infected. But he's never turned. So they have him in quarantine. And in this quarantine, they're able to, like, get to know each other a little better. And we get to learn kind of what makes Harrison different, what happened to Kennedy's father, things like that. So, Kennedy's father, who had died a year beforehand, he was a security guard at Ezekiel Labs. All this was kept from Kennedy until Beverly had told her. On duty one night, her father went, I don't want to say he went crazy, but the paper said that he went crazy and he ate the face off of another security guard, and he was shot and killed for that. He has heightened sense of smell, hearing, and I believe sight. So the other dream that Kennedy has about Beverly finding her father's body comes to fruition. It starts off with Doc and May coming in going, hey, we found this, we heard this broadcast of this woman who's at this building in Ezekiel Labs, basically saying there's survivors there and they need help. And they're just like, okay, well, we can devise a plan to possibly do this. But when the zombies break into the school, or the infected break into the school, they have to flee. So they go all the way down to Ezekiel Labs. They get there, and they have this horde of hundreds of infected chasing after them. So Harrison tells them to get inside to get to the 15th floor, and he runs past the building. Kennedy's trying to get to him because they've finally confessed their feelings to each other. You saw there like a little like song and dance between them throughout the book, but then it finally, they're just like, I can't. Harrison finally goes, I can't fight these feelings for you anymore. I know that I'm going to be a danger to you, but I don't, like, it's not that he doesn't care, but it's been proven to him over and over and over again that maybe he's not the danger that he thought he originally was. So the rest of them, they get up to the 15th floor. They kill a couple infected on the way. And once they get there, they find about a dozen people. 15 hours after they get up to Ezekiel Labs, Harrison comes back. He tells them, you know, I had them chase me. I lost them, and then I had to wait up on a rooftop until dark so I can come back. Now, while they're in Ezekiel Labs, they find, I think her name is Marion Kimmel. She is the, like, president or CEO of Ezekiel Labs, or the head of it, and she's also Harrison's Aunt Eve's boss. Now, Eve had taken a sample of Harrison's blood because Eve was working on finding a cure for Alzheimer's. It's because of his traits, his appetite, his sleeping habits, the heightened speed, smell, sight, his reflexes. She all thought that could cure Alzheimer's. Instead, it made a virus. And it made the virus. Now, when they first got in there, one of the men, I believe, I don't remember what his name is, but he had asked if they saw anybody outside, and Beverly sarcastically said, tons. So he's thinking that it's a whole bunch of survivors. No, Beverly's talking a whole bunch of the infected. So a little bit after they find out all about how this virus was created, all hell breaks loose. Because one of the men of the group who took Beverly's sarcastic comment seriously went out to find them, but instead was turned. And that is the end of the book. Oh man, so I was reading this book, and so school started up in August. November was when the zombies broke in. I mean, those kids lasted so long in that school. Every single one of them, except for Beverly, were taking it seriously. Because she was in like her own little world of denial, saying, oh, everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. My dad's going to come to me. We're going to, you know, we're going to be somewhere safe and all this. And it's just like, well, would I be the same? Would I be doing the same thing? Oh yeah. I would be probably in my own little bubble going, I'm okay. Everything's okay. I will have someone eventually will come for me and we'll be fine. We'll go somewhere and we'll be fine. It's like, I think most of us would probably be a little bit into that denial mode of the world is ending. I really have to applaud these kids for making it so long, because here's the thing. If you look at it at different standpoints, this is a horror movie. Straight horror movie. You've got 5 17, 18-year-olds stuck in a school during the zombie apocalypse, just trying to stay alive, using the resources that they have. And then once their safety is compromised, they have to run to find other means of safety. We have one more book in the series, and there's a lot of things coming that you would never have thought of. I do like how, even though it's the end of the world, you kind of have some of them coupling off, like Doc and me, they are constantly spending time together. You can tell that they kind of have crushes on each other. And then the romantic situation that's going on between Harrison and Kennedy, where, you know, they've been kind of like watching each other for a year and never talk to each other, and that is the day that they do. And Kennedy even says one time, you know, if I hadn't dropped my stars and we hadn't talked, I would not be here, because I would be on the other side where I would be out in the open. I don't think I would have made it back to safety. And just think about this. There are, in this school, a little over 2,400 people total in that school. And only 5 remain safe. So I'm going to do a little math on that. Only 0.002% of that school is still alive, is safe, that they know of. That, for me, that is a ridiculous number. So if there is 2,100 students in each graduating class, there's roughly 525. In my high school, when I graduated, there was probably only a little over 800 students total. I only graduated with around 190 students. And I know that there have been a few other graduating classes in a couple of the other schools that have only been maybe like 10 to 15. I think one of the guys that I work with, his daughter is a senior, and she goes to a private school, and there's 38 graduating seniors this year for that school. It is ridiculous. Put yourself back in high school, and if this outbreak were to happen, what were your odds of making it into the classroom or into the school, into safety, before you were bitten? What would have been your chance? I think my chances would have been extremely low, because I always showed up to school anywhere between 15 to 10 minutes before the bell would ring. And that would give me, this was me just getting into the parking lot. So this would give me enough time to go to my locker, drop everything off. I would be able to get a drink from the cafeteria and then get to my classroom and finish whatever homework I did not finish the night before. I got yelled at a lot for doing that. And soon enough, they didn't take the answer of, I had to work last night as a serious, exception anymore. But no, like seriously, like, And just going out there once everything started happening and seeing the chaos. I mean, you want to help people, but then you got to keep yourself safe. I think I asked this question before. If the zombie apocalypse were to happen, how long would you last before you were turned? I think 1 week for me. Maybe less than that. So it's just kind of ask yourself. How long would you last? Would you be able to last the 4 months that they did in a school? All right. This is a really good book, and it does bring a lot of questions up to the mind of, and it does make you also say, I wouldn't be able to do half the stuff that they're doing. And I would, truthfully, in all honesty, I'd have a full mental breakdown. That there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that statement. I would have a full mental breakdown. Yeah. All right. So that is it for this episode. If you guys want to find me on social media, you guys can do that on Instagram and Twitter at Not Your Normal Books Podcast. You can also email me at notyournormalbooks@gmail.com. Any book suggestions, thoughts and feelings, questions, anything like that, you can either email me or message me on Instagram about them. As always, please rate, subscribe, and review. Every little bit helps other people find this podcast. So, with that all being said and done, I will see you all next week.